to Reconstruction. That would be in terms of date, 1877. So as far as Reconstruction goes, I don't think I'll be able to say too much about it. Something, but time's limited. Okay, now, before we left for vacation, we were approaching the Civil War and talked about it, namely how historians have approached it since the Civil War. Above all, as they approached it with regard to the role of the African American in the Civil War. And what we noted is that basically historians down to World War II minimized and actually pretty much ignored the role of the Afro-American in the Civil War. And also the tendency was not to take too seriously the issue of slavery as being fundamental causation for the Civil War. Then we also observed, on the other hand, how since World War II, and the Civil Rights era in particular, this kind of interpretation has pretty much been turned around completely. Where, for example, a historian like Schlesinger says, it is obvious that slavery was a fundamental cause of the Civil War, and that the moral issue of slavery was a fundamental cause of the Civil War. Obviously not the only one, but a fundamental one, a key one, one that you cannot ignore in interpreting the Civil War. So there's been a complete shift. Well, okay, as far as the role of the African American then in the Civil War is concerned, I think I told you that when I was a boy and also in high school, the role of the African American in the Civil War was pretty much negated. And I was never taught about the role of the black soldier in the Civil War, which is obviously a fundamental and key role that they played in earning their own freedom. So let's talk about that a little bit first of all today. I think I also observed that during the period of the Civil War, the black soldier was called the sable arm. Sable is another English word for black. Or in other words, the African American soldier was kind of the right black arm, sable arm, of the Yankee Army. Well, how many black soldiers served in the Civil War? The exact figure is pretty hard to come by, as are figures generally for the Civil War, but historians are pretty well agreed that it was in the range of 186,000, approaching 200,000. Not quite, but approaching it. So they fought in the Civil War in those numbers. Now, I mentioned to you that this fact was rarely mentioned until about 50 years ago. And of course, today, this is not ignored anymore by historians. And if you go on library shelves, you can find any number of books written about the role of the black soldier in the Civil War. Of course, what was that movie just a year? Glory. That'd be a key example, I think, of the change and the shift that's taken place. Well, if they were mentioned prior to about 50 years ago, it would be negative. It would be in derision that you shouldn't take their role seriously and this kind of thing. Well, I can give you an illustration. One of the most popular books about the Civil War in the 1920s and 1930s was a book written by a historian by the name of Woodward, W.E. Woodward. And it's basically a history of the role of Ulysses S. Grant, the great Yankee general in the Civil War. It happens to be a book that is 575 17 pages long about General Grant and his role in the Civil War. And in that whole book of over 500 pages, you have only 7 lines that deal with the role of a black soldier in the Civil War. And in those 7 lines, there are no less than 6 historical errors about the role of a black in the Civil War. Well, I'll give you those 7 lines and show you where the errors are. Okay, so now I'm quoting from Woodward. The employment of Negroes as soldiers began in 1863. Well, that's error number one. The colored troops were first used in an experimental way at the Siege of Vicksburg. That's error number two. See, Vicksburg occurs in July 1863 at the very same time that the Battle of Gettysburg does over in Virginia. Well, that's error two. Before the end of the war, there were about 100,000 Negroes in the Yankee Army, Union Army. Well, that's error number three. It was 186,000. Okay. Most of the officers of high rank were not favorably impressed by the Negro troops. That's error number four. And I'll illustrate this to you shortly. Sherman, of course, Sherman's the great general who marched through the South, captured Atlanta, and then went to the sea. Sherman considered them a joke. Well, that's error number five. And Grant usually kept them in the rear, guarding his wagon train. That's error number six. And that's all you get in this 500-plus page, really, history of Grant in the Civil War. Well, okay, now, what are the historical facts? Actually, they were employed very easy in the war, early in the war. When you get into the first year of the war, towards the end of the first year in 1862, they're being used. Where black soldiers were first used is where Yankees began to make encroachments on the South. That would be along the Atlantic coast of the South, in Georgia, South Carolina, and in Florida, where the Yankee Navy would try to capture southern forts along the coast. And then they'd capture it, and then a lot of slaves would come to Yankee lines, and then the slaves would be put into the Union Army. Well, that happened already in 1862. Not 1863, as Woodward says. Now, as the role of the black soldier increases during the Civil War, when you go from 62 on, never mistake it, there was deep prejudice against the black soldier throughout the Civil War. But as their role increased during the Civil War, the prejudice against them and against their use diminished over time. See, 62, 3, 4, 5. Those are the years of the Civil War. So as their use was employed and their value was seen in fighting the Civil War as soldiers, then prejudice diminishes. Well, you can see this in Abe Lincoln. See, Abe Lincoln issues his Emancipation Proclamation after the Battle of Antietam, or Manassas Junction, depending if you're southerner or northerner, how you name it. So the Emancipation Proclamation comes January 1st, 1863. After that battle, after Lee is driven out of Pennsylvania, and it's really the turning point of the war there, and by the way, one of the bloodiest engagements of the Civil War. Well, Lincoln then responds to the use of the black soldier in 1863, shortly after their, well, emancipation. By the way, the only slave who is emancipated by the Emancipation Proclamation is a slave who is behind rebel lines at that time. It doesn't free all the slaves, only those behind rebel lines as a war measure. course, later on, something else is going to happen there. But this is what Lincoln says. Now, quoting Lincoln, some of the commanders in our armies in the field who have given us our most important successes, either be somebody like Grant and Sherman at Vicksburg, places like that, anyhow, they believe the emancipation policy, that would be his Emancipation Proclamation, and the use of colored troops, so they're all talking about colored, or Negro, the word that's used at this time, that they constitute the heaviest blow yet dealt to the rebellion. So that's what Lincoln says in 63, the use of black troops, the heaviest blow to the rebellion. Later on, when you come to the end of 63 and 64, and Sherman begins to cut loose and moves on Atlanta, and then is going to go to Charleston, cutting this deep swath through the South. He cuts himself off completely from all communication and simply lives off the land and marches. Well, he had a lot of black soldiers with him as he marches to the sea. Well, and what does he receive from his commanders in the army as it marches to the sea? They get very favorable reports about the role being played by the black soldiers as Sherman is marching through the Deep South. Or in other words, the quality and the fighting spirit of the black regiments get very high marks from Sherman's generals when they give him his report. Then when you come to late 64 and 65, when Grant is simply grinding down Lee in Virginia, bloody, bloody battle that's really hard to match anywhere, anytime in history. Anyhow, he has a lot of black soldiers with him in Virginia the last year of the war. And there would be the example of, as it was called, the All-Negro 25th Corps, which played a very important role, and Grant speaks very highly of them. Now, why Woodward doesn't find that in the records, you know, for a historian who comes later on and sees it, he's going to wonder, what the heck? So obviously, they're kind of blinders on. You don't see what it is you don't want to see. Well, you know, that's a typical kind of problem. Anyhow, Grant is deeply impressed by them. Then I think what's kind of interesting and ironical is that the very first soldiers to go into Charleston, see, in Charleston is where Fort Sumter was, is where the war started. Those were black soldiers, not white soldiers, who were the first soldiers to march into Richmond. Black soldiers, not white soldiers. See? So, you know, you kind of redress the historical record. I think one of the most interesting battles of the Civil War, the bloody affair, is right at the end, before Lee surrenders, they have entrenchments protecting Richmond on the south, and what Yankee sappers do is dig deep tunnels under the entrenchments of the rebels. And then they blow it all up at once, and there's still a huge crater there. See, they're trying to break the line and then enfilade on the two sides. Well, anyhow, in the Battle of the Crater, which, by the way, was not successful, the key soldiers who fought in that battle were, again, black soldiers. See, that's 1864. Now, don't mistake it. When you read about the role of black soldiers in the Civil War, the prejudice against them throughout the war in the Yankee Army is clear and is deep and is pervasive. Their lot was much harder than the white soldiers. Initially, they were paid less. And of course, as the war goes on, the black soldiers protest against this, and towards the end of the war, there's a redress of grievance in terms of making pay equal. Initially, the idea was is that black soldiers, see, there's the Sambo image, which whites in the North share with whites in the South that the black is a symbol, kind of like an eternal child. Therefore, they should not have their own black officers, and black soldiers should always be led by white officers. Well, there isn't a change in that policy again until way at the end of the war, but the change does come, and then you begin to get black officers. Well, the prejudice can kind of be summarized in this one sentence made by a corporal, a Yankee corporal, and I'm not going to use the one word he uses, and of course you'll know what it is. I have difficulty saying it. But anyhow, now, quote, this is what he says. We don't want to fight side by side with a black soldier. Now, you fill in the blank. Okay? We think we are too superior for that race. There's a fundamental notion. See, even all whites who were for emancipation and freedom for the black would not grant that there is equality in terms of races. So you find this in the Yankee Army. Right, they had less pay initially than the white soldier did. No officers until the end of the war, and if captured by the Confederacy, they would be in danger of being executed summarily or being put back into slavery. So their condition is much tougher than their white Yankee compatriot. Okay, now be that as it may, yet in terms of strategy and tactics, the black abolitionists and the white abolitionists always knew that once a black soldier, or a black, and a slave puts on the Yankee uniform, things are going to be changed, inevitably. So then, as a matter of strategy and tactics, in spite of prejudice, in the pervasive racism, the abolitionists, black and white, but black above all, people like Frederick Douglass press and insist that Lincoln put black soldiers into the Yankee Army. Because once that is done, the whole purpose of the Civil War in terms of the immediate would shift from merely trying to preserve the Union to a more radical phase, not only preserving the Union, but eradicating slavery as well. And that's one of the key things that is going to happen as soon as the black soldier is used. And that, of course, comes along with the Emancipation Proclamation as well. Well, Frederick Douglass, as I think I've told you plenty of times, he's one of my patron saints. Okay, 1863, this is what he says. This is Frederick Douglass. Quote, once let the black man get upon his person the brass letters, U.S., brass letters, U.S., let him get an eagle on his button, the button for the eagle symbol, and a musket on his shoulder and bullets in his pocket, and there is not a power on earth which can deny that he earned the right to citizenship in the United States. See? Now notice what Douglass is saying. Already here, he is going beyond the concept of mere emancipation or freedom. Along with freedom comes citizenship. See, and that will be one of the key issues of the period of Reconstruction that I'll address a little bit, I think, tomorrow. That's going to come along with it, citizenship. Not merely freedom, more than that. And then what's going to be pressing there, too, is citizenship with full equality as an ideal and fundamental principle. Of course, what's going to happen to that, we'll have to see. Now, where did most of these 186,000 black soldiers come from? Well, it shouldn't be too surprising that most of them came from the Deep South. And that most of them were former slaves. Now, as soon as they flee from slavery, or Yankee armies come and occupy the area, immediately they are no longer slaves, but they are freedmen. Okay? So, most of them come from the south. Now, actually, out of 186,000 total, see, that's a round figure, approaching 200,000, about 93,000 of them came from seceded states. Okay, now you want to get something clear. 93. Okay? See, now, all slave states did not secede from the Union. Some states that did not secede from the Union but were slave states would be states like Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee, Maryland, Delaware. They all had slavery. By the way, if we had a lot of time and we're just focusing on total course on the Civil War, one thing that we could talk about for a whole day would be in those slave states that did not secede, actually, you often had civil war within that state until the Yankees dominated. I think the best example there would be the state of Missouri, where you really had internal civil war in that state throughout the Civil War. In fact, most of the battles of the Civil War occurred in Missouri, a lot of them small little pitched affairs. But battles nonetheless. So 93,000 of the 186 came from seceded slave states. Okay? So most were ex-slaves. Okay? Then from the border states, you had another 40,000. The border states would be slave states, like Kentucky, like Missouri, like Tennessee, like Maryland, places like that. And out of the total number of 186,000, 53,000 came from the free states in the north. Right? So about a third came from the north. Not even a third. All of the rest came from the slave states. And by the way, most of them then would be enrolled in regiments from Massachusetts, New York, so forth and so on. And recruiting agents would go with the Yankee Army in the South and then recruit them into regiments from New York, wherever, say. Well, okay. So, by the way, an important thing here is this says something about a stereotype. I'll talk a little bit more about these kinds of things in a minute, I think. That during the Civil War, the slaves essentially remained loyal to the master class. Not true. Some did, some didn't. You can't generalize here. It's much too complex a story. Well, so the chance comes when Yankee armies are in the environs, the slave goes to the Yankee line. That's the tendency. And then a lot of the men into the Yankee Army, they go. 93,000 of them. A big number. So it, just in terms of the contribution of the black soldier to the Union Army, is highly significant. See, at any given time towards the end of the war, there would be roughly 1 million troops in the Yankee Army, roughly. Now, that's just an approximation. Now, when the war is over with the surrender of Lee, and that comes in the summer, well, really the laying down of arms of all Confederate troops, July 15, 1865. Civil War is over with. At that time, when you begin to muster out the Yankee Army, how many in the Yankee Army at that time were black soldiers? Well, got the figure here, and it's an exact one. 123,156. I'll just round that off and say 123,000 out of an army approximating 1 million. Well, what does that mean? Okay, now take your statistics. I think I told you that throughout American history, the African-American percentage of the total American population is about 10%. Well, in the Yankee Army at this time, that 123,000 would represent about 12%. Or in other words, their numbers in the Yankee Army is larger than the proportion of blacks in the total American population at that time. So just in terms of their numbers, highly significant. Now, how about casualties? During the Civil War, casualties were high for all soldiers. And if you figure that there were about 186,000 black soldiers, how many of those lost their lives? I'll just round off the figure. 68,000. Well, 68,000 out of 186,000. So you see how high the mortality rate was. Or in other words, about one out of every three black soldiers did not survive. And you find this kind of loss in a general way in the Confederate Army and the Yankee Army as well. The losses in the Civil War are unbelievable. Now, something else you want to get straight, though, is this. During the Civil War, battle casualties were high, but casualties due to wounds and disease were much higher. In other words, the art of medicine was not very developed. And you read about the carnage on the battlefield and what happens afterwards. It's just a horrible thing. How many black soldiers were killed in battle? Well, there the numbers is about 2,800 were killed in battle. So the balance of the 68,000 was due to wounds suffered in battle. You don't recover from them. A disease. Disease is rampant. And missing in action. That kind of thing. Now, what's generally true in the Civil War is, as we noted, there is much greater numbers in terms of death due to disease than actually the fighting. But those losses are high, too. The importance of the black soldier, and I think you can almost make the argument that the re-election of Lincoln in 64 would be hard to conceive without the role of the black soldier in the Civil War as an aid of turning the tide at a critical point. See, when you come into 62, but more into 63, in the North, there is unbelievable war weariness. And then what happens in the North is you have one political faction which is trying to come to some accommodation with the South to have that war stop. And of course, if it did, that would mean the nature of the Union would be quite different, or let the South go its way, that kind of thing. So there's deep war weariness. Then it's at that junction that you have this injection of the black soldier, of the sable arm, added to the Yankee Army. Then another thing that happens is during the Civil War, when the black soldier begins to be recruited into the Yankee Army, and then the free blacks in the North conscripted into the Yankee Army, well, what happens is that at that point, anti-black feeling is at its height. A racial feeling. We're not going to fight this war to free the black, that kind of thing. But it's at this point then that the black is interjected into the Yankee Army. So anti-black feeling is at high tide when they begin to come in significant numbers in 1863. So the black soldier serves in spite of the fact that very often a slave would simply be impressed into the Yankee Army. Or somehow cudgeled to come into the Yankee Army. Pay was less. They wouldn't have their own officers generally. See, that kind of thing. Remember, if they're captured, they're in a very precarious position. But yet into the Yankee Army, they come. Now, there's another figure that one can take a gauge here. Is during the Civil War, you read a lot about it and study it, you will know that desertion was a very common kind of thing. In depletion of the Yankee armies due to desertion, or going, quote, over the hill, you simply desert. Well, black soldiers, about 15,000 of them went over the hill. Well, but that's only 7% of the total number of soldiers in the Yankee Army who went over the hill. Going over the hill is typical. Who went over the hill more? Whites did. Considerably more. See? So, again, you've got a contrast here in terms of that. Well, okay, you can sum this up. One of the generals at the Battle of Nashville, a very important battle, and in a way a key battle, is General Morgan, Thomas Morgan. And he says this about the black soldier, a quote. And he's kind of summing up after the war is over with the role that the black soldier played in the Civil War, quote. Colored soldiers have fought side by side with white troops. They have mingled together in the charge. They have supported each other. They had assisted each other from the field when wounded and lay side by side in death. The survivors rejoiced together over the hard-fought field won by common valor. All who witnessed their conduct gave equal praise. The day we longed to see had come and gone, and the sun went down upon a record of coolness, bravery, manliness, never to be unmade. A new chapter in the history of liberty had been written. It had been shown that marching under the flag of freedom, animated by love of liberty, even the slave becomes a man and a hero. See, now there the key phrase is, in the context of this period in our history, even the slave becomes a man. That notion, the proving of manhood, when the stereotype was, is that he's really only a man-child, a sample, a pervasive notion. So there's General Morgan giving his testimony. Okay, so a new chapter in freedom had been written, obviously, who did a considerable share in the writing of that history, the black soldier did. Now, somebody who saw that from the very beginning and wouldn't let Lincoln off the hook was Frederick Douglass, insisting right from the very beginning. Now, other important chapters that go along with this, and we don't have time enough to talk about it. See, along with the Yankee armies as they went through the South, came a whole lot of teachers from New England, primarily, but not merely there. See, the evangelical religious revival at that time. So what would happen in the camp where the slaves came and where the soldiers were and where you had black regiments, you would have teachers there teaching. And remember, most of these soldiers would be illiterate because they were field hands, most of them. What do? They go to school while they fight. They learn to read and write. Right? So education in freedom is a big part of this whole story. And kind of the thirst for knowledge that's exhibited on the part of the freedmen now, anyhow, is, I think, a real exciting and interesting story in its own right. Then also in the army, they learned how to give orders, that kind of thing. When they had all received orders as slaves, so there's a new dimension there as well. So they learn how to use authority, freedom of choice, personal discretion, all of these things. Okay. And they serve towards the end, above all, as officers, non-commissioned officers, and simply soldiers in the line. Then something else, which was never questioned on the part of the ex-slave, and certainly not the black veteran, was loyalty to the flag and to the country. Another interesting chapter that one can trace is about the 40 years after the Civil War, which takes you down to about, 1900. See, after America's wars, we always have veterans organizations. Like now, it's the VFW. You know, what else have we got? Veterans of Foreign War. Well, the Yankee veteran organization was the GAR. See, if you go look in cemeteries, and you would like to do that, and look at tombstones, very often next to the tombstone you'll find kind of a lead circular plate on it, which would be down in the ground, and if it says G-A-R on it, you know that that's a Civil War veteran. Grand Army of the Republic. G-A-R, Grand Army of the Republic. Well, in the GAR, the black soldier, veteran of the Civil War, was highly respected during this period in that veterans organization. And by the way, something that interests me there very much is that, as I'll try to show you, it's during this period, when you go from 1880 down to 1920, this is the period when in the South you have Jim Crow put in place after the period of Reconstruction. And this is also the period in American history when at any time in the South or the North, racism is most virulent. This is the period, okay, down to about 1920 or down and through World War I. Now, I'll try to show this to you as we go along. But anyhow, during that period, the black soldier, the veteran of the GAR, has the respect of the country. Well, okay, so the war ends slavery, and the black soldier plays a key role in it, and in the process proves, which really didn't need any proving at all, but the majority culture would need that proof, that the slave can become a man on his own right.